this tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Set the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again.
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
I'm Joyce Sturby.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Clackamas County will be considering this week whether to allow a company to site up to 9 marijuana production licenses on a single property located on Highway 170 south of Canby. The property is a 21-acre farm that currently features a single-family home and a large peach orchard. It's located near Lone Elder Road, more or less directly across the street from the Lone Elder store. The subject property was purchased by the Portland-based Horta Latitude 45 LLC for $665,000 in late of 2017, when a prior sale, which was another unrelated cannabis growing operation, fell through. In planning documents, the applicants say the property was the most promising of the 8 or so sites they considered. They like the Canby area because of its proximity to Portland and its reputation as the nursery capital of the Northwest. In other words, it lies on the 45th parallel and it grows plants well from the sun. Horta's plan was to remove the existing peach trees and build a series of large, approximately 3,400 square foot greenhouses on concrete pads, which could then be leased to multiple licensed marijuana growers, essentially acting as tenant farmers. The team behind Horta has been developing their business plan since recreational marijuana first became legal in Oregon in 2015. They have pitched to numerous potential investors and raised over $730,000 in capital, according to county documents. These applicants spent much of the last year doing the groundwork needed to implement their business plan, including designing the 8 greenhouses that would be built in the first 2 phases of development, hiring contractors to transfer water rights and drill wells, conducting soil testing and land surveys, and of course submitting their land use application to Clackamas County, and it was approved in June of 2018. Then, the county passed a new ordinance in March of this year that prohibits more than 1 cannabis production licensee per parcel of land. That obviously represents something of a problem for Horta, which is based on the idea of multiple licensed marijuana growers operating on the same property. The request of the county would consider this week is for something called vested rights determination, which would allow Horta to move forward under the code as it stood before the new ordinance was passed. The concept of vested rights stems from Oregon common law, first set forth in 1973's case Clackamas County versus Holmes. The Holmes case established several factors for vested rights to be granted, one of the main ones being the amount of money spent on the project before the law was changed. In this case, the applicants say that they spent more than $700,000 by the end of last year, which represents about 24% of the total estimated cost of the project, $2.9 million. That's well above the 7% traditionally deemed to be the minimum amount in other vested rights cases. The applicants also point to the fact that the county has already allowed a similar multi-licensee indoor growth operation, Dewey Farms in Oregon City. They say that for the county to enforce a new code adopted after Horta's land use application was approved in June 2018 is patently unfair, basically the equivalent of moving the goalposts. The county may not adopt and apply retroactive zoning ordinances, they argue, in a document submitted to the county. If the vested rights determination is approved, Horta would agree to limit the total number of production licensees to 9. 8 for the indoor production and 1 for the outdoor production. 2.3 acres of the property is designated for open-air growing under their land use plan, as well as an additional license for the processing of cannabis oils and concentrates. The hearing has been set for 9:30 a.m. October 3rd.
The Clackamas County Canby Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC, program is relocating to the Canby Public Library effective October 3rd. Clackamas County will provide WIC services from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Canby Public Library. literacy goodie bags from Canby Kiwanis will be provided while supplies last. The county says they picked the library because it's a central location near public transit with story time, a play area, and bilingual books. The WIC program in Clackamas County helps over 6,800 women, infants, and children each year through nutrition and breastfeeding education, referrals to community resources, and access to healthy food. Studies have shown that participation in WIC reduces premature births, infant mortality, low birth weight, anemia, and childhood obesity. The WIC program also benefits the local economy. This past year, participants spent more than $2.4 million on healthy foods at local grocery stores and over $45,000 on fresh produce from local farmers. Fathers and caregivers, such as grandparents, legal guardians, and foster parents, can also sign up a child they care for depending on their levels of income. Those who currently receive OHP, SNAP, or TANF are eligible for WIC benefits. Families who do not receive those services may also qualify. Addiction Policy Forum is a national nonprofit dedicated to eliminating addiction as a major health problem. The forum has recognized the Clackamas County Transition Center in its Oregon Innovations to Address Addiction report. This report spotlights innovative programs that address addiction and provide support for families and communities. According to Jessica Nickel, founder of the Addiction Policy Forum, the Innovation Now initiative recognizes revolutionary programs, such as Clackamas County Transition Center, that are transforming the response to addiction in Oregon and offering solutions during a time of crisis. The Clackamas County Transition Center offers services to those leaving jail or prison and to those at risk of returning. The center is located just across the parking lot from the Clackamas County Jail. Services include employment and housing assistance, peer mentors, cognitive therapy, mental health and substance use disorder assessments, on-site healthcare referrals, GED courses, and parenting classes. On September 10th, the Addiction Policy Forum presented the Transition Center team with its Innovation Now Award. Before, we were working behind the curve and looking for treatment options once they got out. Now a plan is in place when they do, explains Transition Center Supervisor Eric Anderson. We are honored to be awarded an Innovation Now program by the Addiction Policy Forum. Anderson said the Transition Center was recognized along with 8 other programs from around the state as being innovative and groundbreaking in the field of addiction. It was very humbling to be in a room with representatives of these other programs and to hear the stories of change that are taking place in people's lives, Anderson said in an email to his staff. I cannot state enough how proud I am of all of you and the work that you do to help people break out of the cycle of criminality and addiction. Your efforts are being recognized at both the local and national levels. You are truly helping save the lives of people that we serve. The Clackamas County Transition Center is the first facility of its kind in Oregon and is intended to be a major step forward in reducing the county's jail population. Located in what was once the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office South Station, the Transition Center is an all-in-one location providing crucial services to people leaving jail or prison and to those at risk of returning. Its goal is to break patterns and change lives. Upon release, clients can walk out of the jail, cross the parking lot, and enter the Transition Center to receive a wide range of services to facilitate their re-entry into society.
A Clackamas County deputy recently hooked a catch he was decidedly not angling for while training on the Upper Clackamas River. It was himself. He caught himself. In a recent post to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office Facebook page, Deputy Dan Ferguson explained how he got a fishing hook and lure stuck in his face while practicing patient rescue and evacuation techniques. Ferguson, who serves as a contracted patrol officer for the Happy Valley Police Department, said he and another deputy were practicing deep water entry, jumping off a 20-foot rock, and swimming across Class 3 rapids. That already sounds dangerous. While I entered the water, I made it to the surface and then aggressively swam to the other side, he said. Once I got out of the water, I thought I was stung in the jaw by a bee until I reached up and I felt something. As you probably would have guessed, he was not stung by a bee. He went to the other deputy and asked what was going on. Deputy Clemson's response was priceless, and I quote, "Dude, you got a fishing lure in your face!" The two deputies rafted to their takeout point where Ferguson changed, drove himself all the way to the emergency room. And in case you're wondering, yes, he kept the lure. "I'm planning on taking it fishing," Ferguson quipped, "because obviously it catches things."
Canby football got run over by Newburgh Friday night, as the visiting Tigers totaled 385 yards on the ground. The assault was led by super sophomore Prince Potier, who juked, jived, and spun his way to 185 yards and 5 touchdowns on only 21 carries. A chilly September drizzle made for a difficult first half, with several turnovers on both sides. But while Newburgh was able to mitigate the weather's impact with their success in the running game, Canby was not. The Cougs managed barely 100 yards on the ground, and the bulk of that was from sophomore quarterback Mikey Gibson, who provided a much-needed spark in the fourth quarter, with Canby trailing 40-0. The loss dropped the Cougs to 0-4 on the season. Overall, the team has looked much better this year on both sides of the ball. It has showed new energy, pride, and determination as an improvement from most of last season. Unfortunately, this has yet to translate to the win-loss column. After the game, new head coach Jimmy Joyce was quick to take responsibility for what might have been a demoralizing loss for one of the youngest teams in the brutally difficult Three Rivers League. In a quote, Coach Joyce said, "Last night was a tough one for us. All credit goes to Newburgh for playing a physical and hard-nosed game. It took us a long time to wake up and start the fight. Sadly, it was way too late, and that is on me." Unfortunately, the schedule does not get any easier this week, as the Cougs hit the road to face the undefeated Tualatin, ranked number 6 in the state. In other sports, Canby volleyball has been doing great, winning 3 of their last 4 matches. Their sole loss came this week against West Lynn, who were undefeated in league play and ranked 4 in the state. Even so, the Lions barely escaped with a victory. It came down to the final set, with West Lynn winning 15-13. It was only the Cougs' second loss in league play, dropping them to 5-4 overall. League play continues this week. They'll see 5-5 Tualatin on Tuesday and then host Lake Oswego on Thursday starting at 6:30 p.m. In soccer this week, the women's team came away with a tie against Beaverton before dropping a hard-fought match to Wilsonville 5-3. Super sophomore Joey Baggio scored all 3 goals for Canby, including one she punched in 3 seconds before the halftime buzzer to tie the game 2-2. Similar results for the men's team as they fell to Lake Oswego at home Tuesday 5-1, then battled Oregon City to a 1-1 standstill on a goal by senior captain Ben Martinison. In other news, junior midfielder Francisco Cabello was named Max Prep's Oregon Player of the Week for his 2-goal, 1-assist performance in the Cougs' September 17th win over Lake Ridge. On deck is number 7 Tigard, undefeated in league play and back home to face West Lynn on Thursday. Kickoff at 7:30. The ladies have non-league matches this week, facing Barlow on Tuesday and Glenclough Thursday. Finally, in cross country last week, the teams traveled to Lake Ridge for a Three Rivers League meet between Canby, Oregon City, and Lake Oswego. The women's varsity was particularly impressive, as seniors Isabella Kasalik and Jennifer Torres finished 1-2 to pace the field. Izzy was the only runner to finish it under 20 minutes at 19:48. Canby finished second overall. Senior Matthew Powell paced the men's team, finishing third overall behind Max Reed and Grant Pauley, both from Oregon City.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
You know, Halloween will be here before you know it. Heck, the decorations are already in the stores. So I've got a scary good deal for you. DirectLink is offering 50% off their blazing fast internet speeds now through All Hallows Eve. Not only will you get a sweet candy corn of a deal, but every one of their broadband connections comes with unlimited data, free. And that's no trick. So switch to DirectLink to stream and surf as much as you like. Plus, take advantage of free Wi-Fi home networking for 6 months with free installation of commercial-grade Wi-Fi equipment that ensures your entire home has the strongest, most consistent signal in every room. Talk about a treat. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop for blazing fast internet. So imagine being asked to compose a piece of orchestral music and have it be performed in public by an ensemble of professional musicians. Now imagine doing that as a high school freshman. If that sounds scary to you, you've come to the right podcast. In the Canby conversation today, we're going to be talking with Halidar Wright. Halidar is a freshman at Alliance Charter Academy in Oregon City, where he plays violin in the orchestra and chamber ensemble there. We also have his mother, Emily Wright. They live in Canby. We had a bit of a scheduling snafu, so Halidar and Emily aren't with us just yet. I'll be following up with them later, but right now I do have Jeff Payne. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. Jeff is a member of Fear No Music, a musical ensemble that explores and performs great music of the 20th and 21st centuries, and he's a director of Fear No Music's Young Composers Project, which promotes the education and advancement of young composers.
Exactly.
And it was in that capacity, Jeff, that you met Halidar and came to work with him.
Yeah. The Young Composers Project has been going for a number of years now, and Halidar sent an application in last summer, and we took him into the program, and this is his first year in the program, and he completed the piece. But I suppose before I get to the piece, I should probably fill in a little bit more information about the project itself.
Yeah, what's it about?
It's interesting. It came about in a totally unexpected way. It was one of those things where something sort of popped up and went, well, there's a need here. How do we fix it? A number of years ago, I was judging a composition festival of young students, and they had written a bunch of pieces, and almost all of the pieces were written for solo piano, which the kids themselves were playing. Mm. And when I was working with them and making suggestions about changing their composition, I would frequently make a comment. I was like, wow, this would sound really good if you wrote this melody for the flute or for the clarinet or the violin or something and added that instrument. And one of the girls looked at me and said, well, I don't have a flute. At that point, the light bulb finally went off, and I said,
It's funny how you just miss stuff like that, right? I mean, like, yeah. When you work with an ensemble, you think, oh, you could just, you know, pull an instrument out of the,
Right.
Yeah, well, kids are like, I don't play the flute. I don't have a flute. Yeah.
And it was what I was suggesting was that perhaps she could find one of her friends to play the flute or something, but she interpreted it as though she had to have
right.
it. But anyway, it sparked the idea. And so in conjunction with Fear No Music, and the Oregon Music Teachers Association, we developed this idea of creating a workshop for young composers where they would have access to professionals playing the instruments for them, and then they would write for it and get feedback and develop the piece. So that's the way we have set up the project. It's a series of three workshops during the school year. Mm. There's one in the fall, one in the winter, and one in the spring. Mm-hmm. And the kids bring in the pieces that they're writing. We play through them, give them whatever feedback they need. You know, they don't play the violin, for example, and they want to figure out, how do I write something that sounds really good on the violin, because that's what I'm hearing, but I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
So we will play through the piece, give them some examples on the violin, give them some examples on the flute, try all different things.
Yeah.
We make a recording of it for them so they can go back home and rewrite it with a recording as sort of a template or a reference.
It's interesting. It's a little less directed, I think, than I imagined that it would be. I kind of imagine that you start with them from the very beginning, like, this is how you compose music. But it sounds mm-hmm. like they kind of come into this with quite a bit of musical background, and you're more take what they're already working on and kind of punch it up and teach them some things that they maybe, you know, haven't encountered yet. Or
it's a little bit of both. We do ask that when the kids apply to the project that they have some musical experience and that they're able to write down music.
Okay.
You know,
so I'd be discounted already.
I guess so. You know, that they at least have the background of understanding sort of basic notation and stuff.
Yeah, no, I'd be out.
Yeah, okay. But then where they go from there, you know, frequently with the younger kids and the new kids that are coming in for the first time, they may just have a melody and some chords that's only 6 or 8 bars long.
Yeah.
And we'll start with that in the first workshop and play it and say, well, gee, you've got something here that sounds kind of mysterious. Mm. You know, if you take that and we divide it up for the instruments in this way, we give the melody here and we put the accompaniment here and we make it sound more mysterious.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, more happy, joyous, whatever we can do. And then we'll also suggest, you know, okay, so you've got this, you know, 6 or 8 bars here, just got started. What are you going to do next? How are you going to develop this into a piece that's, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 minutes long?
Yeah.
And talk to them about how you expand a piece, creating contrast, different instruments, you know, different sections and stuff like that. So there's no set curriculum, I guess, is maybe where you were thinking. It's a very experimental way that we don't require the kids to write any type of particular music or in any particular style. Whatever they bring in, we work with them and help them develop that.
Cool. It sounds like a really cool experience for the kids. I imagine that they get a lot out of it, and it's always so awesome. Like, I even remember when I was a kid, like, you know, I was more of a writer, but like any opportunity that I would have to have something that I had produced creatively and have actual professionals look at it and be like, you've got something kind of good here and here's how you can make it better, is so fulfilling, you know, as a kid, especially when you're just kind of figuring out who you are and what you might want to do with your life. But so that's, you know, a great experience. But what from your perspective is kind of the goal, or what are you trying to create out of this, or give to the kids in a larger sense who participate in this project?
Well, the larger goal is to give all of these kids the tools and the ability to write their own music. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Now, whether the kids go on to pursue that in a professional sense, some of them do.
Yeah.
We've had quite a number of that are now pursuing professional careers as composers and stuff. And we have 3 kids this year that are all off to college with composition majors and stuff. So there's that aspect. Or there's also just the aspect that even if they don't pursue it, they will probably continue writing music, you know, on their own for their own projects.
Yeah.
You know, I know that talking to some of the students who haven't pursued it professionally, that they've continued to write, you know, music for a church that they attended.
Oh,
or,
cool.
You know, things like that. That
yeah.
It's even though they're not making money with it, they're still using it and putting it out in the community that way. So, and I think it's also one of the goals is to develop a creative spark in these kids. You know, mm-hmm. you were talking about how having a professional look at your writing when you were young gave you feedback, and I think
They had no idea what they were doing, you know, the monster they were creating.
Well, the way that I look at it is, you know, that in terms of what it's also developing is an ability to take a long-term project over the course of a school year and complete it. It's not a one-time thing. They have to work on this the entire 9 months before it's performed publicly. And I think one of the things that's important is it's so easy for anybody, not just students, children, to just push a button and turn on the music these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's everywhere.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh.
And what I think a lot of the kids take away from this, even if they don't pursue it professionally, is the idea that writing your own music is really, really fun. It's much more interesting than just pushing the button and listening to what comes out of the radio or out of your speakers and stuff. And
out of the YouTube.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's one of the goals is to develop the larger creative process in students and get them excited about making their own work and using that as in all aspects of their life.
Cool. Yeah, kind of giving them a new way to interact and engage with their world. That's awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is that it gives the kids an opportunity for personal expression that's very unusual and unique, because anytime you write anything, whether you're a writer who writes short stories, mm-hmm. fiction, poetry, or a person who writes music, there's always something very personal about what you write. And so I think having this opportunity for the kids to write something that is publicly performed that shows what they have put into it emotionally and stuff is really important.
Yeah.
And developing a sense of having this public acknowledgement of what's going on inside their minds.
Yeah, yeah. Self-expression is so mm-hmm. healthy in that way, especially at that age. So tell us about Haladar. We're going to meet him in a little bit, but what's your impression working with him?
Well, Haladar, like I said, this is his first year in the workshops, and his piece expanded a lot, you know, from the first workshop to the last one. If I'm trying to remember back to the first workshop last October, and I think he was brought in about 6 or 8 measures. He was just starting out. And so we worked with him and said, let's, you know, develop this, let's expand it, let's try some of these different instruments and stuff. And in each succeeding workshop, it got bigger and bigger. And so the finished piece is, I think, 3 minutes and 15 seconds long and uses all 6 of the instruments in the ensemble. There's a clarinet, violin, cello, a piano, and percussion, 5, not 6 instruments. Uses them, you know, to create different colors and different moods and different things. So I think for him, even though he plays in an orchestra, the chance to sort of use those instruments in a way that he
chance
would want
to be the top dog.
Exactly, yeah. There's something I notice with the kids when they're writing that there is, that there's this chance to be the boss, but there's also at the same time it's simultaneously very scary, because, you know, if it doesn't come out the way that you want it, then you're sort of standing there going, uh-oh, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
You know, so it's very interesting to watch the reactions when they play through the final piece the first time and they really hear the completed thing, and most of the time, I would say 95% of the time, they're totally thrilled.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's really great. I can't believe I did that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while, they're like, oh, that wasn't what I wanted. And you know, then we have to sort of figure out how do we get it to where the student wants it. So in Haladar's case, I you'd have to ask him whether it came out exactly the way they wanted it. I think it did.
Yeah.
He can...
We'll ask him, but I mean, even that, like, I think a success rate with teenagers of 95% of them liking it, I think is really good. But so we actually have his piece.
Yes.
You want to go ahead and play it for us?
Sure. Just a little bit of background. It's a piece called A Beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Haladar wrote, when he was describing the piece, he said, well, it's exactly that. It's a beginning into writing music. So mm-hmm. I think it's sort of an acknowledgement that there's some sort of experimentation, trying some things, and just sort of feeling his way into it. It's interesting. It's a very lyrical piece, but it's got sort of a sad quality to it.
Mm.
Or maybe the chords and the harmony that he have chosen give it sort of a, it's got a little bit of an Irish feel that, you know how Irish music, you know, can sound sort of melancholic.
Yeah.
Even while it's dancing. So this has a little bit of that.
Okay. I love choral music and kind of the emotions and things that it can bring out without words, you know, just with focusing on the different instruments and the way that they come in. I wanted to play the piece with you because I thought that, you know, your take on it would be a lot more intelligent than me, and you could bring out some things. Because, like, you know, you mentioned it being kind of sad, and my thought hearing it initially was I thought it sounded pretty happy, you know, at least at the beginning. But I do think, for me, about midway, you felt a little bit of a change, like maybe when you first heard those little cymbals, you know, come in. And it started to feel like maybe there was a little more conflict or a little more kind of confusion, like something might have happened and you're trying to process through it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one of the things I particularly like about this piece is the sort of ambiguity between is it happy, is it sad, is it melancholy, what is it? It's not a piece that comes right out and is really plain and obvious. It's very subtle and it goes back and forth. Like you say, sometimes you think it's sort of joyous. You know, there's this sort of, you know, Irish jig rhythm underneath it a little bit, but yet the melodies are sort of melancholy. And there's a number of places, you know, you sort of hear it stop, like it's trying to think, well, where should I go next?
Yeah,
you know, which. It gives it this sense of, like you're saying, you know, this is a beginning into writing music that he's sort of thinking, okay, now where should I go? What should I do? So I'm sure he can explain more about, you know, how he worked those in and stuff.
Yeah.
I know when I hear it, I really like that sense of searching for something and rather than feeling like, okay, we're starting at the beginning and we got to the end, we're done, and there was no question how we got there.
Right. And I mean, not being a professional, you know, even music listener, let alone composer, but like, I'm shocked to know that a 14-year-old wrote that. You know, I mean, that sounds like good music to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if like your take as an actual musician is different, but like, I find that very impressive.
Well, I think you know, everything that the students write in those things comes out wonderful. There was 30 students participating this year. And we got 30 fantastic pieces in the final concert, final two concerts. And I think that what I notice with these pieces is that none of them sound like each other. Mm. That there's a very distinct personality that each composer has.
That's cool.
And, you know, how they pick the... I don't know, you know, the character and the mood and stuff of their pieces and how they write, you know, it varies greatly from student to student. And so there's just an enormous variety of pieces that we get. Mm. And so comparing them is kind of hard because, you know, I know one piece we had this year that was sort of like in a New Orleans jazz style. Mm. You know, there was this piece, we had some pieces, a couple of them that were very avant-garde, sort of modern-sounding stuff. Had several pieces that sounded... The kids were very taken with movie soundtracks.
Yeah.
Or...
Of course.
Video games. Yeah. And so their pieces, they wanted them to sound like... and so there's this huge, huge range of pieces that we get.
Cool.
I think the thing that, for me, is most fascinating is just the enormous range of what we get with the kids.
Yeah, I think if I were going to be a composer, my theme would be pizza. I really like pizza. Well, that's about all the time we have for you, Jeff. Unless you have anything else to add or leave us with, I'm going to go see if I can find Haladar and Emily.
Sure. I would just say, just for your listeners, if this intrigues them, there's information on the Fear No Music website about the Young Composers Project.
I believe it's
fearnomusic.org.
Gotcha.
Go on there and look under, I think it's the menu under YCP for Young Composers Project.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they have questions, they can email us there and, you know, we're happy to get back to them and talk to them about it and stuff. So thank you. This has been wonderful.
Yeah. No, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for your time and thanks for what you do for our young composers.
It's my pleasure.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey,
Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Welcome back, listeners. Well, I finally found them. It took a little longer than we expected. When we were talking to Jeff, Haladar was in high school. He now has kids his own age that are in high school. So it's been a minute. I'm just kidding. But it's taken like all summer to track you guys down. Yes. How are you doing? Emily and Haladar, welcome on to the Camping Now podcast.
Thank you.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Okay. Do you even remember this project that we're going to talk about?
No, this is just all distant memory. I've read about it. I've never actually heard about it.
Hopefully you took some notes that you were able to revisit. But Emily, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about Haladar and how, you know, let's embarrass him. Tell him how proud you are of his burgeoning musical prodigy. And is this something that he just grew up, was born with a little composer's wand in his hand, or something you saw from an early age?
Well, yes, actually. This will be quite embarrassing, I think, but...
Oh, good. That's what I was hoping for. Yeah. I wasn't joking. I love to embarrass 15-year-olds. I got enough of it when I was 15, yeah.
Okay, this is great, because no one except you two can see my face.
For the benefit of the listeners, Haladar is bright red right now. I have to put on my shades.
He's got red hair, so it's the
right.
Whole
yeah,
thing.
Lots of red coming at me. Okay, yes, with it.
So when he was really young, he loved classical music.
Yeah.
Like, he just gravitated towards it. It was his thing.
Did you play it for him when he was a baby? Like,
yeah.
They say you're supposed to? Okay, to make him smart.
No, actually, I was in Tennessee, and they didn't have a lot of funding for, like, public radio, so they just played classical music.
Public domain.
Yeah. Like, the whole day, and so that's in the womb what he listened to. But anyway, when he came out, he just loved it, and his dad would try to expand his, like, repertoire.
Right.
And there was one specific moment that we all remember very clearly. He was about 4. I would say 6.
And he's like, little Haladar, this is called Journey.
No, it was Led Zeppelin.
Okay,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he doesn't agree with this assessment anymore.
Right.
But he just was like, Dad, that's stupid. Like, he would only listen. He was like, classical.
I might have to turn this off. Like, I need a minute. No, I'm just kidding. That's funny.
No, but now he likes it, especially.
Yeah.
Immigrant song, though. Yeah.
I mean, well, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
It's just fun to listen to.
Yeah, he's definitely expanded and everything.
Yeah.
Really love that one. Awesome.
Yep. And then he did, when he was 6, his sister made a castle, is what she called it. It was like Play-Doh with popsicle sticks stuck in it. And he felt inspired and composed a song called Beta Built a Castle. Yeah, that was his first.
Okay, and now you go ahead and sing that for us all again.
It was all instrumental, but
No worries.
Yeah.
Well, you can hum it.
I thought music with words was stupid. So
he's very opinionated.
Yeah. That's good though.
Oh, yeah.
So what was this experience like for you, Holodark? I mean, this was where, so you grew up being like Mr. Judgy, like judging other people's music, knows music better than anybody, and then you work with some actual composers and musicians, and was that a little intimidating, or did you feel like I found my peeps?
Well, I mean, it was very intimidating to me because I was worried that I was wasting people's time, you know? Like, these are really high-class musicians who could be doing all sorts of things, like practicing or something important, you know?
Right.
I felt, it was intimidating.
Right.
I felt like I had to do really well.
I don't know what the musical equivalent would be, but it'd be like me walking into a gym with like all these like really huge cut like bodybuilder guys that could just like crush me with one finger. It's like that, but music.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, everyone was super supportive.
I was gonna say,
which like, was
they do it to help young people and connect with young people and raise that next generation.
For
right?
sure.
So they're definitely not like that sucks.
Yeah.
What was that? You call that a song? More like a jingle.
Yeah.
What was your kind of some of your big takeaways or on reflection from the experience? Do you feel like it's push you more toward wanting to dive more into this musical career or do music at least on the side, or has it given you a different view of things?
Well, there was this one kind of masterclass we had with someone who's in the film composing industry, right? And that was really interesting. Heard a lot about just what he does every day and just
so he composes like music for films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also in he was part of the program earlier as a student.
Okay.
So
it was John Williams. I mean, you don't need to be coy. We know it was John Williams.
He wrote a fan letter to John Williams when he was like 8. He got a response back from his
secretary.
Uh-huh.
But it was a full letter thanking him for being interested in and not asking for something from John Williams.
That's great.
So yeah, that's what he was writing. That was his fan letters, was to John
Williams. Composers, yeah. Love it. John Williams is the man, right? Can we just take a second and say, like, amazing.
He's the best. Star Wars and
Jaws.
Indiana Jones and Jaws.
Yeah,
Jaws.
Yeah.
E.T.
Yeah. All of it.
He defined that whole generation of movies.
For sure.
Just single-handedly. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. For sure.
But yeah, I was talking to this movie composer, and composing for, like, a movie or a show after that didn't sound super-duper attractive to me because you've got to, like, match it with the screen and have your music come in at the right times, come out at the right times. And that just, I don't know, it just didn't really strike me as something I was super very interested in, you know?
Felt a little constricting, maybe? Like you're in a box.
I don't know. I can't really put a solid definer on it.
Yeah.
However, composing music for something that's a little bit more freeform, like maybe a video game. Like, I play a lot of games, and I like listening to the music that happens with, like, if you get into combat or you're just exploring, you know? The music in games really kind of paints a backdrop for whatever you're doing, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
So I'd like to look into that and kind of explore that a little bit.
Cool. Maybe do some composing for some local podcasts. You never know. Emily, did you notice really a change in him from this project, or any kind of growth that you feel like he maybe learned something? Or
yeah, I think it gave him, I mean, his reason, he had to write an essay to get into the program.
Yeah.
And his reason, I mean, you won the scholarship, but you had to write an essay to get it accepted.
Yeah, there's a scholarship my school was giving for musical endeavors, which I wrote an essay for.
Mm-hmm.
That's the essay I wrote.
Okay.
Is that the one? Okay, he just wanted something that would keep him on track, because he tends to have the attention of 15-year-old boy, I guess.
15-year-old, yeah.
And so he was just wanting some regiment and something that he had a deadline every month to do it, and that really worked for him. He was able to get through. We had some technical difficulties where we lost everything. And we had to get it back. And I mean, there was drama, but I think...
Wait, what happened?
Well, we lost his whole piece.
Yeah, there's... I messed something up with
like
the file
of, the way through.
Of it. And everything was just gone, so I had to start over.
Safe.
Something like that. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, and it was gone? You couldn't get it back? You had to redo it?
Yeah.
Oh,
but
man.
We had some hard copies of previous versions, because they kind of go through like this whole process of like you have your initial thoughts, and then you get a new version, or you go another direction, so...
Yeah, I don't care. That is the worst. Like, that sounds horrible. I'm so sorry, like, on behalf of technology.
You're the one we go to for that, when we need to complain about technology?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
you will
I will
apologize?
I will totally bash technology with you, and then apologize on behalf of
That'll
it. Yeah.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he got it together. So I think his growth throughout it was just keeping something consistent. And then, obviously, that big hurdle at the end, he made it through. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then to hear the pieces at the end was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was that like for you, Holidar? Like, that's what I really want to ask. Because, like, I think the program is so cool. Me as an old man, like, just seeing these kids be supported through this process and then have these, like you said, top-level, experienced, accomplished, professional musicians then play your work. What was that like?
Well, I mean, it...
He's like, oh, it's pretty cool.
I mean, every time that I was in the room with these people, there was just a sense of awe that I had about just how accomplished these musicians are.
Right.
And
hey, will you introduce me to John Williams?
it just made me feel super privileged. They were...
Sure.
Playing it, you know? And I, throughout the performance, I was kind of judging myself a little bit because I do that sometimes. Mm. But, I mean, just hearing it played, where it was played live, like, so on the program I use on the computer, right, I can kind of hit a button and get a little mock-up of what it might sound like.
Yeah.
But it's all kind of electronic and doesn't sound...
It's a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound super good.
It's overly perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a robot.
Yeah. There's a lot of... But hearing it played by real people
on
real instruments in front of me, that was spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you feel like, you know, like just out of place a little bit? Like, you know, like I might feel if I were given a whistle and like told to go coach the... You know, Portland Trailblazers. Like, I'd be afraid they'd just, like, take my clipboard out of my hands and be like, you don't belong here. Like, what are you doing?
I mean, yeah, there was some of that for sure.
No,
like, I was always a little bit worried that I wasn't doing it right or doing enough, which is, looking back on it, silly, because they are there to help me to do it right.
Yeah.
If I was doing it right, I wouldn't need to be there.
Right.
So, I mean... It was a learning experience, you know?
Cool. Well, we're almost out of time. Do you guys have anything else to add before we go? Anything that we didn't talk about or just last-minute reflections on this experience?
Well, I mean, I'm honestly just glad I did it, you know?
Yeah.
Because...
It's an accomplishment. It's a real feather in your cap, man. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
But also just being able to do it and... experiment and have people who are qualified to give advice on this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, especially for instruments I didn't know how to play. Like, I know how to play violin, you know? But for, like, a cello or the clarinet or the vibraphone or whatever other percussion I used... They could tell me, like, oh, no, that note is too high, or that's difficult, or I need to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So having people who actually play the instruments and understand how they work intimately was just a real blessing, sure. because then they could kind of bequeath their knowledge unto me,
right.
and it's just tools to use.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you still got one of the instruments. You got me beat because I can't play any. I mean, wait, do they have a harmonica in their orchestra?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I can't play. Wait, do they have like badly played amateurish acoustic guitar?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I don't play any orchestra instrument. What about you, Em? Mm. Take this out.
Oh,
say something profound.
I'm just no pressure.
Right.
I'm just glad that they provide this for the kids. I mean,
awesome
it's
program.
From like sixth grade, so there's these little kids getting up there.
Yeah.
I mean, their pieces. There was one girl.
It was a whole story.
It was a story. She created this whole story with all these characters, and it was just perfectly sixth grade character. Like, it was just wonderful that came out of her. And then there was like a college student that was doing whales or something about the way whales do something. I can't remember exactly, but anyway,
me it just sounded like whale song.
Oh, I wanted it to, but it didn't. It actually was a different part of whaledom, I guess.
It sounds like we're just like, oh, it was about whales, but it was a really beautiful piece.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just the fact that they will do this, that these professionals will take these pieces that nobody's heard before ever on the planet.
Yeah.
And just bust them out.
I think it's awesome, just as like even a self-preservation of like these artists to preserve their own art, of like passing on their skills very directly to the next generation of artists that are at least at this stage in their lives very interested in that career and that side of things. I think that's something that really should be done in all, you know, like I wish there was something like
crafts.
That for writers, for all crafts. Like it's really cool to see that modeled out and really necessary, I think so. Well, thank you guys for finally coming by. This is really fun. I appreciate it. Sorry I said your name wrong, Haladar, in the other segment, but that's what you get for not showing up. So I'm just kidding. We're going to take a quick break, guys. Stay tuned.
Okay, so you have friends over and you want to tell scary stories, right? Well, can you think of any good ones right now off the top of your head? No? Yeah, me either. So what do we do about it? Well, back when I was a kid, there were these things that you would go to the store or the library to get. You'd open them up and take a journey into somewhere that you could only live in your imagination. It was called a book. I know I shouldn't really be so cynical, but you know, I just feel like books are leaving us and getting turned into movies. So, what are some of the best books to have sleepovers, parties, and camping trips? Well, that was Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It was a collection of, well, you guessed it, scary stories. It was awesome and terrible and fascinating and frightening. It was our childhood being pushed to the limits. So what would make better material to get a hold of for a movie, right? Right. And with Guillermo del Toro producing it and writing the script for the movie, all horror fans and movie fans should be ready to jump on board for this film, right? Right again. A young girl, Stella, and her friends get in trouble on Halloween night, and eventually Stella finds a book that belonged to a woman who is trapped in her basement. The woman was known for having killed children after she would tell them scary stories. When Stella begins to read the stories at her home, the people she knows and loves become the targets of an ancient and dark curse. She must work with her friends to try and find a way to stop the curse of the scary stories that keep killing people in her hometown. So was this movie a letdown? I guess it depends on how you want to go into the movie and what you're expecting. See, this movie is based on a book or two that captivated the terror in the hearts of young people. Some of the stories were really scary, and some of them were really dumb. but they weren't written to be classic masterpieces like Pride and Prejudice or A Christmas Carol. They were written so that teens would have a scary bump in the night. So if you go into this movie realizing that a young teen would enjoy this and be scared, and step into the mindset that you might actually come out of it liking it for its slight scariness. It's not about lowering your expectations for a good movie, but rather for a really scary scare. It has some really creepy parts, but it's not overall super scary. It's got some trippy parts, but it's not a whacked out Kubrick masterpiece. So I liked this movie, even though it was kind of a younger teen scary movie. One of the things that this movie does really well is atmosphere and underlying themes. It brings Halloween and autumn to the mindset, like the smell of apple cider. It plays with the mood and the feeling of the darkening season and the warmth and safety of home. As well, you can see a theme of war, new age, PTSD, the ramifications of others' decisions, anger, fear, obsession. This movie is incredibly deep if you take the time to look into what these monsters represent, or they can just be creepy things that crawl out of the basement and come get you.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved him 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
Huge thank you as well to our supporters on Patreon. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we seriously love. For information on how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, a patron of the Canby Now podcast, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.